Have you ever wondered what it is about criticism that just makes it kind of linger? Like, not like the healthy, let me help you be a better person, constructive kind, but like the mean kind that just leaves you feeling bad about yourself? I watched an interesting video. We all know how much I love Brené Brown, and she describes her experience with criticism, and I want you guys to see it today.
And so my story is that I am a researcher, and I never thought I would have a big public career. And so I did a TED Talk that went very viral. And in the wake of that, I was kind of everywhere for a couple of months, on every CNN.com, NPR. It was everywhere, and something I wasn't used to. And the marching orders from my therapist and my husband were, do not read the comments online. So I read all the comments online. And so one morning, I woke up, and there were two or three new articles out, and I started reading the comments. And they were devastating. They weren't about my work. They were about me. They were super personal. And they were the things that creative people play in their mind and then give up doing what they really want to do. Like, if I asked every single one of you, what would you try if you knew people would never say this about you? What would this be? Those were the comments that morning. Of course she embraces imperfection. What choice does she have? Look at how she looks. I feel sorry for her kids. Less research, more Botox. Just me, personal attacks, the things that really, up until that moment, had inspired me to stay very small in my life and my career, just so I could avoid this thing. So that morning, Steve and the kids leave, I stay home, I get on the couch, and I watch 8 hours of Downton Abbey. And when it's over, I don't want to turn off Downton Abbey. Because the minute you turn off Downton Abbey, you're going to like soccer practice and dinner and back to the new people and thinking, should I get Botox? And maybe, you know, maybe if I stand still and talk. So I get out my laptop and I do a search for who was president in the United States during the Downton Abbey era. Have you ever done that? Like, you're nabbing the TV or a movie, and so when it's over, you just like stay in that space by like learning more about the actor and what's going on. And this is what it says. It's a quote from a speech he gave in the early 1900s at the Sorbonne. And a lot of people call it the Nanny Arena speech. And this is the passage that changes my life. It's not the critic who counts. It's not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done it better. The credit belongs to the person who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred with blood and sweat and dust, who, at the best, in the end, knows the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, he fails very greatly. So the moment that I read that, I closed my laptop, and this is what shifted in me. Three huge things. First, I spent the last 12 years studying vulnerability, and that quote was everything I know about vulnerability. It is not about winning, it's not about losing, it's about showing up and being seen.
I love that so much, because those words that she quotes, that it's not the critic that counts, we know that, right? Like, we all know that. We've been told that before. But if we're honest, the words of the critics are loud, and they are hurtful, and they linger. And it, really, the definition of what criticism is, it's the expression of disapproval of someone or something based on perceived faults or mistakes. And what criticism does is it leaves you feeling very small. Brené Brown is brilliant, and she's added so much value to the world, but somebody had the power to make her feel small just by their mean words tearing her down. And right now, you're all remembering the time somebody criticized you, right? Like, you don't have to dig very deep to, like, get to those stories. They're, like, right there. Like, I still remember being in eighth grade, and something mean somebody said to me, and it's been a lot of years since I was in eighth grade, but those words, those silly mean words, sticks. And what happens is it leaves you feeling not good about yourself. It leaves you feeling vulnerable in a bad way and like garbage. And I was reading these interesting articles, and one of them, a professor was talking about how our brain processes and handles positive and negative information. And what happens is we use different hemispheres of our brain to process these things. And our negative emotions, our negative things that we process through, it involves more thinking, and the information is processed more thoroughly than the positive ones. So what ends up happening is we tend to dwell on unpleasant events, and we use stronger words to describe them than the happier ones, which makes those negative things stick more, which makes them come to the surface of our mind more after all the other ones have worn away. And we know, when we really think about it, we know it's not the critic that counts, but it's the critic that hurts, right? It's the critic that leaves those words that like haunt us all of those years later. But what we have to do is we have to wonder, like, okay, I know it's not the critic that counts. I know it's not these negative things that I'm processing, but how do I push past it? Because they are real and they happen, and people can be mean and thoughtless with their words. So how do I process them in the kind of way, and what do I do with them? What do I do with this negativity and this criticism that we come across in our life? I want you to look with me at Hebrews chapter 10. This is what Hebrews says. Verse 24, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. I love this because the author here is really simple. He's like, we encourage each other. Like, we have this ability to encourage one another. And if criticism is disapproval that makes you feel small, encouragement is just the opposite. It's the thing that gives support and confidence and hope to somebody else. And what's so interesting about this idea is we've been kind of diving into this one another concept together, right? Like when Christ said, how are people going to know that you love me? How are people going to know that you spend time with me? How are people going to know that you're my follower? Like, he could have picked anything he wanted to say. He's God. He got to pick, right? Like, he could have come up with any behaviors that he wanted us to emulate. Like, okay, people are going to know that you're mine by really following the rules really well, right? Or people are going to know that you're mine by never doing anything bad. Or people are going to know you're mine, like, go crush the enemy and rage war. But he didn't say any of those things. When Christ said, the world's going to know that you're mine, what he said was, based on how you love one another. He said, I want you to take how I've loved you, what you've learned from me, and I want you to go love other people that way. And what happens is, the author of Hebrews goes right back to what Jesus is talking about. He said, when we try to figure out what does it look like to love one another, right? Like, how do we love one another on a daily basis? We got to stir up something in one another that pushes us to love better. We got to stir something up within each of us that calls us to do good in the world. And it's fascinating, because this word here for stir up, it's actually only used one other place, and it's when somebody's fighting, disputing with another person in the New Testament. It actually is closer to the word provoke. And it's interesting because when you hear the word provoke, like, we know how to provoke each other, right? But usually the way we provoke each other, we leave each other feeling grouchy. Like, we don't have to try really hard to provoke somebody to anger. Like, sometimes it just happens and we're not even trying. Sometimes we try and we're really good at it, but we know how to provoke each other, and the result being making somebody mad. I know how to provoke. Families are the best at this. Does your family know how to provoke you? Like, they know exactly the right button to push that makes you immediately feel 12 years old again and grouchy. We know how to provoke one another to anger, but the author of Hebrews says, let's think about it for a second. What if we got really creative at provoking one another, not with the outcome being anger, but the outcome being we want to love each other better? He said, what if we provoked one another, like, to do good in the world? What if we tried to stir up something in each other that when we spend time with each other, we are motivated to go out into the world, and instead of provoking one another to anger, we're motivated to love each other in profound and better ways? Because that's what we're called to do. When Christ said what it looks like to follow me, it's this idea of motivating each other in the kind of way that calls out better in us. It's this stirring up something in each other that spurs us on to do more for good in the world. We're called to encourage each other, not criticize each other. We're called to be the ones who take care of each other in the kind of way that builds each other up. And I'm not talking about speaking truth to each other. We all need that, right? Like, we all need people who are speaking truth to us. I'm talking about the criticism that is mean and hurtful. And for some reason, like, we're so good at it too, like in the Christian community, and we like layer it with all of these churchy words, but people should walk away from us feeling better about life, not small about themselves. Christ said, you get the opportunity to go out into the world and love each other in the kind of way that helps people feel better. People should leave our presence not feeling worse about themselves, but feeling better. Instead of us being thoughtless with our words, we get to choose how we make people feel by encouraging each other. There are enough people in the world right now who are good at criticizing, right? We don't have to be them. Jesus said you could be somebody better. You could be the one that encourages people in the kind of way that helps us do life better, that pushes us to love one another better, that has the end result of people feeling like they have it in them to do good. So let's dig into this idea of what encouragement is. I want to give you a couple ideas about it so that we can think about it in very specific ways. When we think about encouragement, there's, you know, like a couple different ways that we could kind of define it and think about it. The first one is, it's this idea of standing beside somebody. It's this idea of kind of standing with someone while they do life. Now, we've been kind of thinking about this one another. It's used so many times throughout the Bible. Who are we one anothering life with? Who is around us that we're doing life with? Because sometimes encouragement feels like knowing just somebody has your back, right? Sometimes encouragement feels like somebody who's standing up with you and they're not going anywhere. Sometimes encouragement is just having somebody stand with you while you work through whatever parts of life you're working your way through. Sometimes this form of encouragement feels like somebody is in your life when it gets hard and they're not going anywhere. Even when it's not easy, even when it's messy and ugly and hard, somebody's got your back and they're just gonna walk through life with you and be there with you. So sometimes encouragement is just standing with somebody, but sometimes encouragement feels like building up courage in another person. There's a reason courage is kind of bubbled into this word here. Encouragement is literally offering strength to another person. Because you know what happens with criticism is, when you get criticized for trying something, especially something that you already feel vulnerable about, and it's like way out of your wheelhouse, somebody criticizes you and you're like, what was I thinking, right? Like, I never should have tried that. I knew I couldn't do that. They're only telling me things I've already thought about myself, right? I don't need any extra. And it messes up our self-esteem. Sometimes criticism messes up our courage and it gives us this fear of, I don't want to try it again because they're right. Somebody knew I couldn't do it just like I thought I couldn't. But the opposite side is we get to encourage one another and help build up courage and strength in each other to keep confronting life, right? Like, life is going to happen tomorrow, today, next week, it's coming. And we get to stir up something in each other that says, don't back down. Don't give up. You can do this again. We get to remind each other that we can be strong, that we can be confident, and we can be courageous, and we can try again, that those negative voices don't get to have the final say. Those critics don't get to be the ones that define us or define what we are capable of. Sometimes encouraging somebody is just adding courage to somebody else. Sometimes it's a reminder to hope. One of the best ways that we get to encourage one another is the reminder that we've got hope. Because the absence of hope is despair. And we've had moments where we felt that, haven't we? There's no heavier weight of discouragement than despair, than feeling like it's never going to get better. It's always going to be this way and nothing is ever going to change. But hope reminds us of something very, very different. Hope says, God isn't done yet, right? Hope says, man, better things are on the horizon. You haven't even seen the best yet. Hope reminds us, like, don't give up yet. You just don't know what God might do. Hope says, there are better days. Keep pushing through. You're going to get there. And sometimes we get to encourage one another by stepping into that dark despair that's weighing us down and say, don't give up hope yet. But sometimes encouragement looks like calling out the best in one another. Where criticism and discouragement leave you feeling like that bad kind of vulnerable and that kind of not good enough, encouragement reminds us of something very, very different. We get to call out what's best in one another by saying you are more than what somebody else said about you. We get to look at each other and say, you're more than what other people think. You're more than your very worst day. You are more than that last bad choice. You're more than who you were yesterday. You're more than who you were in the past. You're more than the things that you've settled for. Sometimes encouragement is the reminder that we have so much potential in us that we haven't grown into yet. Sometimes encouragement is the reminder that we are capable of greatness because we were made in the image of an awesome and great God. And he's given us the potential for good in this world. And we get to look at each other and say, you've got more in you than you've even experienced yet. How could you live into that? We get to look for the good and challenge one another and remind each other, like, gosh, don't settle for that. You've got more in you. Dream bigger than that. Like, give all that you have. This is worth it, right? This wild, precious life that we have, it's worth it. What else might you do? And so we get to encourage one another in these kind of ways where we share our faith with each other and our hope with each other, but it's the kind of encouragement that stirs up something of action in us to go different, to do more, to lean into life and do these awesome good things that God's given us the potential to do. One of the quotes I read this week about encouragement, so good. It says, encouragement, it sounds like such a small thing, subtle and cute. It's what you do with timid kittens. But encouragement isn't cute. It's fraught and it's powerful. When you are encouraging, you are instilling courage in another person. Encouragement isn't timid and it isn't mild and it isn't like a pat somebody on the head and say, aren't you a good girl? Aren't you a good boy? It's fraught and it's powerful because it has the potential to do so much good in us and in the lives of other people. When we think about encouragement in the right kind of way, it has so much potential for good because our words have the weightiness to do this for one another. So how do we do this? I want to give you a couple ideas. If you're writing things down, these would be a good couple, or if you're following along in the notes in the app. There's a couple things that I want us to think about. The first one is this. If I'm going to live this in any kind of way, I have to do something every single day that reminds me why it all matters. Right before these two verses, it's a very great chapter. If you want to go back and read the chapter 10 in Hebrews, it's a great chapter. And then Hebrews 11 is powerful. But it says this awesome thing. It says in verse 23, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Listen how powerful this is. Our encouragement, it rests in the faithfulness of God. It does not rest in the circumstances happening around us. Because circumstances change. Our life phases, they ebb in and out, and the things that we go through. But God is faithful. The God that we know is faithful. And our hope isn't built on what's happening all around us. It's too unstable. It changes sometimes from day to day. Our hope is in the mighty and awesome faithful God that we have. The very one who promised us that we could have hope for the future because he wouldn't let us down. Our hope rests purely in the one who will never disappoint us. And I don't want to forget that. I don't ever want to forget what Christ has already done for me. All the grace I've ever needed, Christ already extended to me. All the love I ever needed, Christ gave. All the forgiveness I ever required, Christ showed me. And we have hope and encouragement in the promises of God because he's faithful. We know that the future can be better because God is at work and he isn't done yet. We know that God isn't done and he's not quit on us. He's not let us go or abandoned us. But sometimes that's easy to forget in the day-to-day hustle of life, right? Like sometimes that's easy to forget in the stress of just trying to get from here to there or just trying to survive the week as a sane person, right? Like sometimes those ideas are very, very easy to forget. And I need daily reminders of why this all matters. I need to do something every single day that reconnects me to the hope that can be found in Jesus Christ. Because criticism is mean, and I need the voice of Christ to be louder in my heart than the negative voices of all those who are around me who are just mean and who don't really care, right? Like they don't even think about how their words affect us. They just don't care. I don't have to live there. Like I don't have to set up camp in the criticism. I don't have to build my house in the world of discouragement. I can feel it, acknowledge it, and then move on. Because he who promised is faithful. Because our hope is in more than just what people around us will say. It's in what our awesome God has to say. I mean, life is loud and it's messy. But the voice of Jesus Christ gets to be the thing that's true and good. And we remind ourselves of it again and again and again. Just listen for a second about some of the awesome words God has to say. It says, "You, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I've chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." I mean, those are powerful words from God that we get to say to ourselves. We get to remind ourselves it matters because God calls me friend. He could pick any word that he wanted to, but somehow he chose me and he called me from the farthest corners of the world and called me friend. And he promises me that I don't have to be afraid because he's with me. He promises that I have a God who will strengthen me and help me and hold me up when life is trying to tear me down. But if I don't remind myself of these things, we forget them. If I'm not intentional about looking and saying and remembering these words, life is loud and chaotic and it screams at us. And I don't have the voice of Christ singing in my heart, pushing back against those things. So we have to ask ourselves, how am I reminding myself every single day that it matters? What am I doing that's filling up my heart with the promises of God? Like, what time am I spending in the presence of God so that his voice is loud in my heart and pushes back against the negativity that I come across? One of these things that's so important for me is I have to spend time reading the Bible. There's so much encouragement when we just rest in the promises of God. But if I don't go there, I don't know what those promises are. If I don't spend time there thinking about these ideas, I can't recall them to mind because I don't know them. And look, sometimes we need more. Like I read the Gospels in the last 2 weeks because I needed a lot of Jesus. I'm not going to lie. Like I needed Jesus. And so I just went where he was and I needed to go back again and again and again. Maybe for some people, like one book would have been good, but like I needed all four of them because I needed the reminder in my heart who Christ is. And we find him there in the Bible, and we find these promises that when we hear these things, we say, what's true? Okay, that might be somebody's opinion, but what else is true? What else do I know? God says this, and I get to push back at the things that bubble up in my life and in our heart and in our mind with these things that we know to be true about God. Sometimes quiet time is so powerful. I just ride in the car sometimes and I turn everything off so it's like quiet because that's where I can squeeze in quiet time. And there's something so powerful because life is loud, isn't it? Like there's some type of constant white noise constantly going on. But sometime in these quiet moments, we just get to reflect on life. We get to process the things that are happening and we get to put it into perspective, right? Like sometimes my mind gets carried away and I have to get back and, okay, stop it. That's not true. That's not real. That's crazy town. Get away from there, right? Like this is true. And I need that time to reflect on it, to put it all into perspective and know why it matters. Sometimes that's listening to music. Sometimes the right song stirs something up in our soul that we just get to shout. And whether it's how wonderful God is or it's swinging from the chandelier, because I can do some Sia pretty good. Not that anybody would want to hear me. It's terrible. But it does something good for my soul, right? Like it stirs up something in my heart that reminds me life is good. Life is better. Don't give up hope just yet. Sometimes, I don't know if you journal, but I really work through journaling. I have like 500 because I move from one to one so much, but I got a new journal this week and it's called Do One Thing Every Day That Centers You. And every day, sometimes I do a couple of pages because apparently I need more than one. But you just go through and there's quotes and there's questions and there's ideas that you get to think about, like what are you going to focus on today? And it reminds us why it matters. So we got to do something, and maybe for you it looks different, but you can pick something every single day that reminds you how good God is, how wonderful he is, how he's working in this world, even in the midst of everything else that's happening around us, because the more we do this, the more we are reminded who God is, and we get to be encouraged by him. Our heart gets to be strengthened by him and filled up with him, and our hope gets to be restored in him. And here's the truth. The more I am encouraged by Jesus Christ, the more I'm able to encourage others. The more time I spend with Christ, the more I want to encourage others. Right? Like sometimes it's just the ability to want to encourage somebody else, but the more time I have with Christ, the more that stirs up within me that I want to. But then the second thing we've got to do is we've got to say who could we encourage, right? Like who are these people that we're doing life with? Who are the people around us that we could intentionally encourage? Because the truth is this, everybody needs encouragement. Everybody does. Like sometimes when we look out at the world and we're like, why does it seem like everybody else has it together and I am a raging hot mess, right? Or social media makes this so much worse because we're looking at, you know, you take like 15 pictures to get the right one and then you post that one and then you like put all the pretty filters on it so it looks like kids are smiling and life is good. And we look at their world and then we look at our world and we're like, well, I'm failing radically, right? Like we look around us and everybody seems like they have it together and we don't. But the truth is, we all need encouragement. We're all one bad day away from being a hot mess, right? Life. Like, it looks like you've got everything organized and you've got everything worked out and you've got this plan and you're moving forward and then crazy life happens. I woke up last week with a terrible toothache. So, of course, I know it's going to be $1,000,000,000. So I go to the dentist and you know how they like take x-rays and then they like tap around on each tooth to find out which one it is, which does not help throbbing toothaches by any means. So, of course, I have a bad tooth and I have to have a root canal and it's been all day and I got to stop at the store and I got to get antibiotics for it. So we do all this running around, finally get home. It's like later in the afternoon. My kids get a situated and get a snack. My daughter comes up to me. She's like, I have a hole in my tooth. Like, what? Why do you have a hole in your tooth? And she gives me, her filling fell out. We just got home from the dentist. Like, literally, we just got home, sat down, and I have this chip of porcelain or whatever they fill it with in my hand, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, nobody wants to go back to the dentist. I'm already, like, squirreling away the hours that it's going to take to do the stuff and the bajillions of dollars, and I was just frustrated in that moment. Have you been there before? Like, you just have to laugh at it because otherwise it makes you crazy. But I was so frustrated and discouraged in that moment. So I called my sister, and I was just, you know, like, let me vomit all over you for a second, because life. And she listened, and she laughed with me and at me, because sisters can laugh at you that way. And she worked me through my grouchiness, and she helped get me back on the right page. Like, okay, it's annoying, but it's not end of the world, right? Like, it's frustrating, but it's not deal breaker. Like, it's you can work your way through it. And life is this way, isn't it? Like, it's up and it's down, and we all need someone in our lives who's going to come beside us and encourage us, who's just going to stand with us and remind us of, okay, like, that is annoying, but we still have hope, right? Like, who's going to remind us that you've got this, get back in it, don't give up yet, like, build us back up when we're frustrated by the things around us. And friends, the truth is, as much as we need that in our lives, we also need to be that for somebody else. We also need to come alongside of somebody else and encourage them. There are people in our circles that need somebody to speak goodness and truth into them when life just keeps battering at them and knocking them off track. We all need somebody to strengthen us and encourage us and look, okay, the road ahead is going to be annoying and it's going to be hard and there are obstacles, but the only way out is through, right? Like, we're going to get through this together and strengthening each other for the journey. Everybody in our life needs encouragement. So who do we get to encourage? You know, our kids need to be encouraged. They're surrounded by meanness. Like, we already have a mean kid on the bus, like, saying mean words. Like, our kids need encouraged. They need our voices to be the one telling them, like, you've got this. You've got what it takes, right? Like, you're strong, you're courageous, you're good enough. They need people like us reminding them of who Christ is and what they are capable of and how loved they are and how fierce they can be. And they are more than what the mean kids at school say to them. Our kids need our voices to be the one encouraging them again and again and again. I mean, just imagine for a second how powerful this could be if our kids knew they had us to stand with them. Like, no matter how bad life got, or no matter how bad they messed up, or no matter what's happening around them, they know that they've got us, and we're going to stand with them and have their backs no matter what, that we're on their team, and that we're going to get through this together. So what if we picked a few words and we said these to our kids again and again and again, right? Like, you're kind, you're good, you're strong, you're courageous, you're generous, you're loved, you're smart, you've got this, right? Like, what if those are the words so that when somebody else comes along and says something mean, which they will, they don't only hear the mean voices, they've got other voices speaking truth and goodness into their hearts as well, they get to push up against those other ones. We get to do this for each other's kids as well. We want church to be a place that our kids love. We want church to be a place that our kids feel noticed and like they've got a spot for them. And we do that by looking for ways to encourage each other's kids, for noticing them and saying something right to them and speaking specifically to them and looking for opportunities just to encourage them and say something nice to them. They say it takes something like 5 positive things to outweigh 1 negative, which means we have a lot of positive things to say, right? Like, we got to work hard to get those positive lists up, but we get to do that for each other, and we get to do that for one another's kids. Our spouses need encouragement. Our spouses have enough people criticizing them and telling them what they're not getting right or what they're doing wrong. And what if we just changed the way we thought about our job with our spouse? Like, our job with our spouse isn't to fix them. It's not to point out everything they've done wrong and how they could have done it better. Not that we're wrong, right? But they don't need us telling them how to do it and what they got wrong and if they would just see the world from our perspective, right? Like, what if we switched our job? And instead of thinking that was our job, what if we said, my job is to encourage my spouse. Our home isn't a home of criticism. Our home is a place where they get to be built up and pumped up to confront life again and again and again. Like, what if we said our job with our spouse is to encourage them in the kind of way that gives them strength and confidence and hope to be the very best person they can be? What if we said every single day, I want to say something that encourages my spouse so that when they leave home, they feel empowered by home, not torn down? Our bosses need encouragement. And I know you're thinking, you don't know my boss, right? Like, they're terrible. But sometimes being the boss is a hard job. It is a thankless job. Like, nobody says, like, thank you for doing my performance review. I appreciate that, right? Like, nobody says, like, hey, thanks for making sure all those spreadsheets got filled out and the orders got turned in. Like, nobody's really going out of their way to say those things. But what if we said, I can encourage my boss this week? Regardless of what I think or want to change or who they've been, like, what if I said, imagine what it could do for the heart of my boss if I just found a way every single week to say something encouraging to them, right? Like, imagine what that could stir up in our office if we started doing that for one another. Or how about just, like, the random people that we encounter in life? Like, have you ever had somebody come up to you and say something nice, like a complete stranger? It's kind of cool. Doesn't happen very often. I was at, I don't remember, a couple years ago, Barnes & Noble with my kids, and my kids love bookstores, and, you know, Barnes & Noble is not frequent because you need, like, a second mortgage on your house to pay for Barnes & Noble because it's super expensive. So we go, and my kids are, like, super excited to be there, and they're, like, bumping and jumping, and we're going up the escalator, and they're so excited to get to, like, the kids' area and pick out the books, and they're laughing and being silly, and this young guy, like, maybe in his 20s, came up to me just out of nowhere to say, like, how cool he thought it was that my kids liked books and I was doing a good job as a mom. And I'm like, me? You know what I mean? Like, nobody really comes up to you and says, like, hey, you're doing a good job as a mom. Usually they're like, could you keep your children? And, you know, but it meant so much to my heart. Like, it filled me up so much. Like, just a stranger saw something and wanted to say something kind. I'm like, I'm going to do that for other people. Like, every chance I see a mom or a dad with their kids, I'm just going to say, you're doing a good job. Some people looked at me like I was crazy town. But I'm like, it meant so much to me. There are people just all around us. Like, what if we found ways to say something encouraging to them, right? Like, the person who served you coffee in the morning, how many people thank them? Or the janitor. Like, nobody goes up to the janitor and is like, you know what? You are killing it at cleaning those toilets. Thank you, right? It's a thankless job. But what if we found ways to say, man, we appreciate you. We notice when you don't do it. But what if we just said thank you for how what the job is that they're doing? Or the person that's working at the event that you go to? Or your server who's busting their butt to earn those tips? Like, what if we just found ways in the people that we interact with, strangers, to say something encouraging in the kind of way that builds them up? And then here's the last thing that rolls into all of this. What if we made this a goal to do it every single day? What if every single day we said, I want to encourage somebody else today? I take all the encouragement of what Christ has done in my life and in my heart, and I want to spill that out into other people, right? Like, the world knows that we love Christ by how we love each other. And one of these great expressions that we get to love one another with is encouragement. We get to be the people who go out into the world and say, I want to make it better. I don't want to settle for just how it is right now. I don't want to just accept that people are mean and there's nothing you can do. I want to push back against that by being the person who encourages others, who calls out better in the people around me and finds ways to build one another up. Like, the world doesn't need more negativity. It's good, right? Like, there are enough haters to last us a lifetime. We don't need more. God didn't say go out and criticize everybody within an inch of their life. In fact, what the world needs more is encouragement. It needs you and I looking out with a heart full of Jesus Christ and saying, people matter. They matter. Christ says they do. He showed us that they do. How do I help them know the truth of that? Because our words are powerful. They have the potential to tear somebody down or build them up. I mean, our words, we know this. People have done it to us and we've done it to others. Our words have the potential to make somebody feel incredibly small or to make them feel like a giant. And we get to choose. Every single day, will I use my words, my actions, to encourage others around me? Instead of criticism, instead of negativity or anger or grouchiness or frustration, how could I choose encouragement today? I mean, just imagine what that would do in our families and in our communities, and if we took this call to be the encouragers in the world seriously. If we said, this is my job, right? Like, I'm not expecting everybody else to do it. Christ called me to do it. I can be an encourager this week. I mean, just imagine, like, how much hope we could stir up in each other and the good works we could push each other to and the courage that we could replace and the despair we could overwhelm by saying, I can do this. I can fill my heart up with Jesus Christ and go out into this world and encourage others so that they feel called to do loving, good acts all over the place. And just imagine what God might do with that. Would you pray with me? Dear Father, I pray that you would help us. I hear the nobility of this call to be an encourager in this world, but Father, it isn't always easy, so I pray that you would help us. I pray that you would stir up something within us that feels compelled, that feels a new desire to be the ones who encourage each other daily. I pray, Father, that you would do something good in the name of Jesus Christ, that we might be the very generation who turns the tide and shows how good and wonderful you are in our community, our homes, our world would be better because of the name of Jesus Christ in them all. Help us, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.